This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Every Tuesday afternoon, we talk a little growth and development and local politics with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. He joins us live in studio. How are you, sir? It's good to see you.
Good to be here, Coy. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's glad to be back. I was actually very glad to get home. You know, you have those vacations, some of those vacations where you could stay another day, you could stay another couple days, mm-hmm. and then there's the other ones where it's like, it's time to go home. I need to go home and rest. I've had a little too much vacation. This vacation was the latter. I was definitely glad to come home. It was
well. You deserved one.
Well, thank you very much. I think so too. The moment, and I actually put this on my Facebook page. The moment of moments on my vacation was when my 7-year-old daughter and I are on a speedboat off the coast of Virginia at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. We are watching dolphins, 2 and 3 at a time, leap fully out of the water into the air in the wake of this speedboat. I have never seen that in person. I've seen it in, you know, plenty of documentaries, but to actually lean over that boat and watch these huge dolphins leaping into the air, it was like the whole pod was playing in the wake of this speedboat, jumping into the air.
That's neat. I was speechless.
It was absolutely beautiful.
I saw that Facebook post and I was glad to get an update from you.
Yeah, well, you're like a Facebook regular now. And
I'm like a regular.
Mr. Twitter, and you're doing it all, aren't you?
We're trying to, Coy. What is there some new program I haven't learned how to use yet?
You changed your email delivery package.
We did.
Yeah, but it was seamless. You couldn't even tell.
Good. Yeah. I was a little, you know, I probably revealed a little too much in that I was agonizing over the fact that we would no longer be able to put people's names in the subject.
To personalize those mass emails, yeah.
Now, I can personalize it within the email, but getting it up in the subject is a special trick.
Right.
And when we switched providers, I didn't think they could do that, but we figured it out.
There you go.
So I'm back on a first-name basis with 2,500 of my best friends.
How can folks be like me and sign up for your personalized emails from Charlottesville Tomorrow where you get the growth and development news before it happens, before it hits the newspapers or the radio? You can get it in an email from Brian Wheeler.
And that's getting even easier, too. We're trying to streamline the website a little bit. So you just go to cvilletomorrow.org, and up in the top left corner, it says subscribe.
It's that easy.
Click on that link, and there you go.
There you go. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We have a whole lot to get to in this hour. Where should we begin?
Well, I tell you, next time you go on vacation, I'm going to need to prepare in advance. Because when you left town, the news just happened over and over and over on these big projects that you and I always talk about.
Yeah. So we have a lot to talk about today.
I wouldn't print a whole bunch of stories. So, yeah, Meadow Creek Parkway ruling came in as you were leaving or right after you left.
Yep.
Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, I've got some scoop on them.
Good deal.
Gannett Fleming, the dam design engineering firm, got fired while you were gone.
No commentary there.
So if you leave town, I need to prepare for this next time.
We have a whole lot to get to today. Stay tuned. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. You get the scoop here before it hits the big media. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We're back in 2.
Did you ride the bus to school?
No. I ride my bike.
What kind of bike do you have?
It's a sledgehammer.
Dang. You got shocks, pegs, lucky. You ever take it off any sweet jumps?
18 minutes after 5 o'clock in Central Virginia. Temperatures up in the 80s. I hope you're doing well, having a wonderful afternoon and a nice ride home. I'm Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. It's Tuesday afternoon. Brian Wheeler, of course, the executive director at Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. Big news with the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Big news.
And we're going to talk about this big picture.
And kind of, I have some old news and some new news.
Okay.
I mean, the old news, I think most people have heard now. Judge Jay Sweat, Charlottesville Circuit Court, ruled against the coalition to preserve McIntyre Park, who was trying to stop the Meadow Creek Parkway from hitting the park. And they were focusing on the county's portion, which is underway. It started at Rio Road right across from Dunlora.
Building
and
now,
K-Tech,
yeah.
That's underway. And this whole lawsuit had to do with a small parcel of land near the Charlottesville High School stadium on a softball field over there. And it had to do with the transfer of that land, or an easement that was put on that land to allow the construction. It's land owned by the city, happens to be located in Albemarle County, city-owned land. And the lawsuit basically said that city council needed a supermajority vote. It needed to be a 4-1 vote instead of the 3-2 vote that it was to convey that easement to VDOT. The judge said he didn't agree. So the plaintiffs lost. But
let me ask you this.
Yep.
That's not the last lawsuit, is it?
It's not. The next one's going to be in federal court.
And this isn't an appeal. This is a different whole...
A whole different issue.
Yeah.
And the next legal issue has to do with what is called segmentation, the segmentation of the Meadow Creek Parkway into three discrete projects. Some people, the plaintiffs are going to argue that it was done intentionally to avoid environmental assessments that should have been done on the project overall. And VDOT will argue and the city will argue that each project has its own utility independent of the others.
And I have, and folks, regular listeners to this program will know that I am partial to the argument of the folks who would say that that the segmentation was on purpose to avoid those requirements. I think they have an excellent case. Doesn't mean they'll win, because what do I know? But it's like saying, okay, if you're going to build a house over here, then you've got to do certain environmental studies. Okay, well, I'm just going to build a window here, and I'm going to build a roof over there and a door over here. But it's not a house. But they sort of fit together like a house, don't they?
But I tell you, Coy, it was interesting reading the judge's ruling, and we don't get to go to court that often for the work at Charlottesville tomorrow. So it was fun to sort of sit in court and then wait for this ruling to come out. But, you know, the judge had to go back and look at the 1902 version of the Virginia Constitution and then the update of the Constitution. And there's all this talk about the framers and what they were thinking. And basically what he said was he thought it was difficult to see that the transfer, the conveyance to VDOT by the city was among those evils that the framers were afraid of. And he said in his argument that what they had in mind was protecting the public from transferring land, you know, to private interest at some below market rate. So that if city council had a friend out in the community and they wanted to slip them a little property, they could then redevelop. Judge Sweb was arguing that's what the framers were trying to protect the community from, and that's where you would need a supermajority vote. He said in this case—
Not the conveyance of land to be used for a road.
Right, and he said, hey, in his—now, these are his words. He said, you know, the city will get a public road built and paid for by the Commonwealth of Virginia, so they're getting something tangible for the community in return. Now, granted, there are a whole lot of people in the community that do not want that gift from VDOT, but it's moving forward. And then the new news is, and the picture that you're looking at, Coy, and is up on our website.
I can't believe this is here.
Yeah, I showed it to you, and you were like, where is that?
Where in the world is this?
Well, it's sort
this
of
a little Charlottesville.
It's hidden from public view right now, but it's the first bridge pier of the Meadow Creek Parkway, and this is where the parkway in the county is going to cross Meadow Creek. So this is down the hill from K-Tech. They're building the bridge down there.
And that
bridge hasn't gotten a lot of discussion because it's you know, a component of the road in the county.
Yeah. But it's huge.
This
is huge.
They're rather excited about how it looks. It's got this stone facade on it. It's got these two arches.
You know what it looks like? It looks like you know the Roman aqueduct?
Part of the Roman aqueduct.
It looks just like that.
It looks like a little section of the Roman aqueduct. That's a great description.
And it's right there. It's right here in Charlottesville over by Meadow Creek.
So
now, where can folks see this picture?
SeavilleTomorrow.org, and then look for the story entitled County's Portion of the Meadow Creek Parkway on Schedule.
How do you get to the newsroom at SeavilleTomorrow.org? You just click on it.
I said we're streamlining everything.
Yeah.
SeavilleTomorrow.org, you're in the newsroom.
Perfect. So you don't have to go an extra step.
I don't have to explain where you go.
Perfect. SeavilleTomorrow.org. Check out this picture. This is amazing, and this is what they're building, part of the Meadow Creek Parkway, the county's portion, which when it opens will just be a road from K-Tech and Dunlora down to Melbourne Road.
It will be a road, but it will not be an open road to Melbourne, because City Council is saying, as part of their requirements for this project, they don't want that section of the road open to traffic until the whole thing is finished.
Well, that leads credence to the argument that these three things are part of one thing, right? So that would help the folks who want to argue that case in federal court.
Yeah, maybe. So anyway, the reason we have that picture up is because the Board of Supervisors last week, their first meeting of the new fiscal year on July 1st, they got an update from VDOT about the Meadow Creek Parkway and what Faulkner Construction was up to. They're 12% done with that portion of the road in the county, and they're on schedule for a October 2011 completion.
But not an opening.
Just the county's portion of the road. It will be temporarily opened next summer, I believe, as they divert traffic off of Rio to, they need to create the entrance onto the parkway from Rio. So there's going to be a detour next summer.
Is the entrance to this road going to be directly across from the entrance to Dunlora? Are they lining
much,
it up?
Pretty much.
So will there be a light there?
Coy, I can't remember exactly, but I think the Dunlora piece, right now it's a problem for Dunlora to get out of their subdivision onto Rio. So from their point of view, it should be easier after this intersection is in place. And I can't remember exactly how the light works, but there will be something there.
How about a traffic circle?
It will not be a traffic
circle. I have decided. I decided on vacation. I don't have many missions in life, but that is my mission. I will stand for this, and this will be my mission. I want to see traffic circles in this community. And we need to do a whole show on it. We've talked about it a little bit.
It's
to me, the more I learn about it, it's insanity. Traffic lights are insanity. The traffic circle is the way to go.
All right.
And we need more of them.
Let it be noted that
there you go.
It's all about traffic circles.
I have spoken.
All right. So that's the Meadow Creek Parkway.
What it's worth. What's the latest? We have time for the latest on Whole Foods.
Well, yeah, real quick there. What we learned also in that meeting with the Board of Supervisors, they got an update from the Albemarle County Service Authority and the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. We learned that both Whole Foods, which is now going to be over in the city across the...
Right
by Gold's Gym and the Kmart. Trader Joe's, which has taken their place over in Albemarle Place, the proposed development that hasn't started.
But it's a nice sign.
But they have a nice sign up. You know what we learned, Coy? Both of those grocery stores will have to get in line and wait for sewer capacity. And guess when that sewer capacity is going to be ready? Not until late 2010, early 2011.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what's up.
So this sewer thing, so Whole Foods, which was going to go in an Albemarle Place, they moved because they didn't have sewer over there, but then they moved to a place where they still don't have sewer.
Well, they're on the same sewer line.
Yeah.
The Meadow Creek Interceptor. So, yeah, I guess they could have they should have picked a different sewer line to move on to.
So the folks who are waiting for the new Whole Foods or the Trader Joe's, don't hold your breath.
Yeah,
this is going to be a while.
Keep tuning in. We'll be talking about this till late 2010, early 2011. Now, they can start building, but they just can't get a permit to actually...
You can't flush anything.
...open business.
Yeah. Don't flush or turn on the water.
They said an average grocery store like that uses 40,000 gallons, generates 40,000 gallons a day of wastewater.
A grocery store?
That's what they said at the meeting.
What, like cutting meat? I guess Whole Foods does basically have a restaurant. I mean, they got a huge bakery and they're always making food. So I guess you...
40,000 gallons a day. So either of those stores comes in and says we need 40,000 gallons of capacity, they're both going to be told you're in line and we look forward to the day we can give you that.
How are we paying for this new sewer line?
Well, the ratepayers are paying for that.
So
if you currently pay a sewer bill, you are helping to pay for that capacity.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow, and Floyd is on line one. Floyd, thanks for the call. You're on with Brian. You go right ahead.
Thank you, Coy and Brian. Just a quick comment about your traffic circle observations. If you go to Europe, you'll get tired of traffic circles very quickly, and you don't even have to go to Europe, because what happens with traffic circles is when the traffic gets heavy, they end up like you go to D.C. and you have stoplights around the traffic circle. It's a total nightmare. And one final comment, if you go up to Frederick County, next to the Winchester Airport, they have a traffic circle that has one input and one output.
Floyd, do you like our little roundabouts?
Not at all.
Because a roundabout...
If you want a real challenge, go to Scotland and try to take on the roundabouts there when you're used to driving on the right hand of the road, and they drive on the left, and the circles go the other direction.
Yeah, I would mess that up every time.
That would be crazy.
It was wild.
Floyd, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and get a weather update. More with Brian Wheeler when we get back. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth and development. But before we do, I have to tell you, when I was on vacation, I don't think I've ever eaten so much in my life, and I loved every morsel. We went to this restaurant down at Virginia Beach, because that's where we go. I'm very partial to spending my vacation dollars in the Commonwealth, Virginian through and through. There's a place down at Rudy's Inlet at Virginia Beach called Rockefeller's. It's some of the best seafood on the planet. It was so good. I had this big bowl of Alfredo sauce with shrimp and scallops and crab meat and noodles. And oh my gosh, I was licking the bowl clean. It was so good.
You know, I'll go into a place like that and order a steak. And it just drives my wife Jean crazy.
Because
she's like you. She wants all the shellfish. And
yeah.
I just don't do shellfish.
Oh, you mean you go to a seafood restaurant?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like the like oysters.
Yeah.
Like I like fried shrimp. Or like the broiled or fish. Yeah, I enjoy that stuff.
I had a good food experience this week.
You did?
Yes.
Where'd you go?
Burritos have returned to the downtown mall.
I think I saw that in The Hook.
It was in
The guy with the cart?
The guy with the cart.
What is this story?
Well, the story is just burritos are back, which is a good thing, because Atomic Burrito...
Oh, yeah, that was really popular.
...was the place for a long time, and then they shut down. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But that's like... been a fixture of my diet ever since I, you know, started working downtown back in 1990, moving from burrito shop to burrito shop.
Really? What do you like about the burrito? What kind do you get?
Well, I've only had one from this place. It's called L's, I think, Burrito and Juice Company.
And it's just a dude with a cart.
A dude with a cart. And there was a dudess.
There you
go. Who was helping out. Yeah, but I had a chicken burrito, and the juice is a limeade.
Ooh, that sounds good.
So it was good. So it's just... great to see burritos back on the mall.
Now, speaking of burritos, are we going to see those at that new Belmont restaurant?
I think that is going to be a Cajun.
And burritos
French
aren't Cajun?
Cuisine.
Well, burritos are Mexican.
Maybe you can have a French burrito. Oh, no, that's a crepe.
What is Cajun food? What is Cajun food?
I never get out of Charlotte.
Gumbo. So gumbo, I guess.
Yeah.
Like a stew? I'm so ignorant.
Now I'm starting to hear the Forrest Gump, you know, shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
Bubba Shrimp talk.
And shrimp gumbo, and that's about it.
Well, funny you should mention that, because City Council last night, as you may have heard, approved a new restaurant in Belmont. So if you like dining and entertainment in Belmont, and you don't live there, there's a new place to go. The residents who live there apparently gave City Council more feedback last night and told them they were not too excited about this.
Were there any residents who did want it that came forward?
Well, the owner of the home who is building the restaurant, yes, he was in favor of it. And, you know, his basic request was, let me rezone my house into a commercial restaurant.
Yeah.
Because he said, I'm 4 feet away from the Belmont Barbecue. I mean, he's saying he can stand at his fence line, reach out and touch the restaurant next door to him.
Yeah.
And he's saying on the other side of his house, there's a lot more room for a more natural buffer. So he's saying, if you're going to draw a line...
Make my house the edge.
Make my house the new edge.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he benefits because
he wants to do a restaurant there. Yeah.
But he convinced three city councilors to go along with that. And now I think of that as a sort of a spot rezoning. Technically, I don't think it is the way they handled it. But basically, by one house, the commercial district in Belmont just got bigger. And it was a 3-2 vote. Councilors Huja and Talaferro voted against it.
Now, have you been out to this site?
I have.
What's your thoughts on it? Like, how would you have voted?
Well, it's a... I mean, I think what you have to do... I couldn't say how I would vote, but let me talk about what the Planning Commission in the city said, because they were against this. And their job, keep in mind, and as you hear about this, often in the county and the city, you'll see the Planning Commission... basically, I would describe it as sticking to their guns or trying to best represent the comprehensive plan. So their job is to look at every request, compare it to the comprehensive plan, and say, does this fit or not?
Yeah, that's their job.
And that's their job. They get a lot of flack for it from applicants who want to do something different.
Than the comprehensive
plan.
Or
out of the box.
Yeah.
And so often the planning commissions in the city and county are saying, no, that doesn't quite fit. But then they get overruled by city council or the board of supervisors who see it a little differently, who are trying maybe to look at the big picture economically, or they're trying to, understand how you can look at this on a project by project basis and come to some different decision. Now, Mayor Norris convinced himself to support this because he and actually Dave Brown said the same thing. They said the issues that the Belmont neighborhood is concerned about already exist today. So this one little house isn't going to make it that much worse. So that was their argument. Let's have our staff work with the community, figure out how to address noise, parking, those things that are already...
Unless this Cajun restaurant is insanely successful.
Then there's that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which,
But is it the camel's nose under the tent? Is that the right metaphor?
I have heard something about that.
Yeah,
something. Is that like the eye of a needle?
I don't know. But anyway, it sounded good for a second. I don't think it's an indication that they're going to rapidly expand further.
Is the horse is already out of the barn? The camels are already out of the barn?
Something like that. Yeah. The camels are already out of the barn.
I actually supported the idea. I think it's sort of cool to have a little corner district in Belmont. Now, I don't live in Belmont, so I might think differently if that were the case. But, this is sort of a... You're almost downtown, aren't you?
Well, the question is, are you driving to get there or are you walking to get there? And are you quiet while you're there?
Yeah.
And one of the proffers, the things that the applicant had to agree to, the proffer says they can't have amplified music, they can't expand the restaurant beyond the current footprint of the house. They have to create a better buffer between them and the residential neighbors. So there's some things in there to try to mitigate.
So you can do it, but keep it in your house.
Keep it in your house.
Keep the noise down.
Keep the noise down.
So no live music at this place?
Be a good neighbor. Yeah, there will not be loud music. And there is a noise ordinance already.
So they can't have like a Cajun band come in.
Maybe an acoustic one.
That would be wicked cool.
They can't have amplified music.
So that means no, you can have, how can you have an acoustic Cajun band? Do they have those things? I have no idea.
Somebody call in and tell us who the best.
I've heard Cajun music before.
Cajun band,
but it's sort of pumped up by some speakers and everything.
Well, you need to go Cajun unplugged if you want to come to this new restaurant. I don't know how that works, but there you go.
So, I'm all for supporting local business, and a guy wants to go into business and start a restaurant. I think that's a good thing. This might turn out to be one of Charlottesville's best restaurants. You never know.
Well, and again, on the other side, Councillor Hooja pointed out there were other properties in the Belmont district already zoned for this type of use. So if they wanted to buy another piece of property that's already got this zoning, they could have built a restaurant there. So their point was there are already places you could have put this. Why are we expanding the district? That goes against the comp plan.
Oh, so that's why he voted against it.
Right.
Yeah. So he sort of agreed with the argument of the planning commission.
Correct. And remember, Satyendra Hooja was on the city staff for a long time.
And helped to create the comprehensive plan.
So, he's got that perspective of you write a plan on paper for a reason, stick to it. So.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. A very quick break. When we get back, water.
We can talk about water and we can talk about jobs.
Water and jobs. This is Charlottesville right now. Let it go. Brian Wheeler is in studio. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org. Visit the website and you're right there in the newsroom. I like that. It's very cool.
No waiting.
No clicking.
Well, we're just a little nonprofit, Coy. So we sort of grew over time and we ended up with this patchwork of websites. We're trying to streamline it, make it easier.
Collapse it all in together. And
yeah.
Yeah. Good idea.
Anyway.
What's this about jobs?
Jobs. Bob Fenwick is running for city council as an independent, right? He's one of the five city council candidates who's running.
Two Democrats and three independents?
Three independents, two of which will be on the ballot, and then Andrew Williams is running as an independent, didn't get enough signatures to get on the ballot. He's going to run a write-in campaign.
Okay.
So I would say there are five candidates for city council, two seats available this November. Bob Fenwick had a press conference, which we like as a group that covers local politics and the local candidates running for office. We like it when they tell us what they're thinking.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
So Mr. Fenwick had a little press conference last week, and he had his jobs agenda that he wanted to share. and it has three parts to it, and I'll talk about it briefly. One, he wants people to buy houses. He thinks that will have a lot of impact on the job market, create jobs for all those contractors and firms that help real estate transactions take place. And he said if he was on city council, he would really be pushing this $8,000 federal tax credit for first-time home buyers or people who have not had a home in the past 3 years. And so he's trying to contrast himself with Dave Norris, the incumbent, Kristen Zekas, who's running as a Democrat, and say, you know, if he was on council, he'd really be talking that up and hoping and trying to help motivate people to do things to help create jobs. The other thing he said was that people need to, the city needs to be hiring people into every, you know, job possible, including things like concession stands. And the example he came up with was, you know, he's a big softball player and they have an Independence Day softball tournament, apparently. And he says the concession stands have been locked up at Darden Tow, McIntyre Park. Nobody's running them. And there's an opportunity to put, I think he said, six people to work. And the city ought to do that and jump on opportunities like that. He said it's a small step, but it sends the message that, hey, we're serious about
who
this.
Who pays their salaries?
Well, that
was the city hires them?
I don't know that that was clear in the, I don't know if the city does that or if a nonprofit does. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But in his mind, a city councilor ought to be out there saying, you know, get a warm body in that job.
Okay.
Because somebody ought to be getting that money. And then the last thing he said, which was kind of interesting, was that new businesses opening up in Charlottesville should get a sales tax holiday through the end of the year. Now, that struck me as kind of interesting because sales tax, what's the sales tax in Virginia?
4.5%?
5% now.
Okay.
4% of that is collected by the state. Well, it's actually all collected by the state. 4% goes to the state. 1% is local. So really, the only thing city council has control over is that 1%.
Yeah, but it's still collected.
It's still collected. So, you know, I called the city attorney. I said, can city council decide not to accept this money from the state, or can they tell the state, you know, not to collect it? And Craig Brown, city attorney, said, you know, he wasn't familiar with this proposal from Mr. Fenwick, but he said it would take an ordinance change by council. And then what he pointed out was that there's a little obstacle here in that the state requires taxes to be uniform, so among all businesses. So you can't really differentiate a new business versus an old business and give one a certain kind of treatment. So then I thought, well, I better call the Virginia Department of Taxation. So I called them. They were very helpful today.
You're quite a reporter.
And they said that, yes, any locality could adopt an ordinance to change the tax that they want to collect. They could decide not to collect that 1%. She pointed out to me that every other locality in Virginia is collecting that 1% right now. But she said it couldn't take effect until 60 days after its adoption. So that sort of narrows down the window you have. And then it would have to be applied to all businesses equally. So
you couldn't have a new business tax holiday.
You couldn't. But you could have a all business tax holiday in the city.
Yeah. But it's still collected. The money then goes from the state
to
the locality.
If the city passed an ordinance and said, we're not going to collect that money,
then it would just be 4% to the state.
It would just be 4%.
And then 1% would not be collected.
And the idea from Mr. Fenwick is if you had businesses, you were giving them some incentive to attract customers. You know, make your products a little cheaper.
Yeah.
Then maybe you'll get more customers in, money trades hands, people get jobs in these new businesses.
Well, I think he's going to benefit from your research.
Well, he might, yes. But anyway, that's what Mr. Fenwick had to say.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and Rob is on line one. Rob, thanks for the call. You're on with Brian. Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually called before I heard the whole conversation, but I hope Mr. Fenwick and other people are going to do what they can to encourage small businesses to build up in Charlottesville and in Albemarle County, because I think it's pretty obvious that a lot of the people who do contracting work, fixing things, other things like that, they actually live in other counties and service people in Albemarle and in Charlottesville.
Yeah, this is Brian. I that's very much what Mr. Fenwick was saying, that he thought there were a lot of businesses that would benefit from, you know, increased activity on that front, but it's finding the right incentives, whether it's for a business to operate in the city or for a home buyer to actually go out and do the transaction and buy a home. But he listed on his website 30 or more jobs that he thought would benefit from increased activity in the real estate sector.
Well, absolutely. Rob, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. Now, what is this about water? You had some breaking water news that... did y'all break this story?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, you break stories every week. So this story was not anywhere else. Charlottesville tomorrow.
We did an update of an old story. So back in November, we looked into how much water the University of Virginia was using. So we did a much more in-depth story back in November. There's a link to that on our website.
It's been going down and down for years, hasn't it?
What they have done is cut back significantly on the water they were using. I guess the high point, look in my graph here, looks like maybe 1999 in the window of time that we've got here. So for 6 years, it was down those next 6 years. And what our story said...
That covers the big drought.
Well, it covers part of it, yes. But it doesn't cover, for example, the drought 2007 that we faced.
Okay.
But since then, since 2005, it's been inching its way back up. So our story was just to update the water data. The university operates on a fiscal year that ends June 30th, so that gave us an opportunity to call them up and say, can you send us your latest water data? And what was interesting, Coy, what I didn't expect was a big billing discrepancy between the city of Charlottesville and the University of Virginia to the tune of 16 million gallons of water.
What?
Apparently there was a meter error. And I'm not sure exactly what that means, except that they weren't able to necessarily...
It's like a wardrobe malfunction.
True. They weren't tracking exactly how much water was being used at some point along the way in the past year. So UVA and the city had to sort of restate their accounts and estimate a few things. And so that puts some of these numbers in question. The university did pay for that 16 million gallons of water. So it's obvious the city thinks that was a fair estimate of what they would have been using. The university paid for it, but they don't agree that they necessarily used all that water.
So somebody lost track somewhere along the
line. But the point is, whether you accept that 16 million or not, we now have another year of increased water use
Is there any explanation for it? Because it was big headlines when they were dropping their usage every year. They were really being proactive.
Well, I think they do deserve credit. You know, back in November when we wrote the story the first time, we did talk about the conservation efforts the university has put in place. What they documented at the time of that story was about 4.5% is what they've been able to conserve with things like new shower heads, not washing buses and service vehicles as often, things like that.
Yeah, they were doing a bunch of stuff.
So one of the things, though, to keep in mind, though, is they implemented a lot of conservation measures. Their usage dropped. But now, as the university continues to grow, what they said was, hey, we're building new buildings. Those buildings take heating and cooling.
Yeah, yeah.
Those heating and cooling systems use a lot of water.
So we're still conserving like crazy, but we're just naturally growing.
It sounds like, if I had to boil it all down, they've conserved, they've implemented a lot of conservation efforts. They've gotten the usage down. Now, as they continue to grow, you're seeing it return to the natural growth, which would be expected with more people, more square footage.
But it still includes all that conservation.
And a thing I think to keep in mind is that the university has a captive audience of water users. If they say, hey, every toilet, every showerhead has to be low flow, low flush, low water usage, they could do that,
then
right?
It shall be so.
They can just mandate it. The Board of Visitors could say, hey,
make it so.
We will not use as much water.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler. Junior's on the line. Junior, you're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
The new mayor on the city council will probably be either Edwards or Hooja, right?
I think that's a pretty fair guess because Dave Brown, of course, has already been mayor. Julian Talaferro will be rotating off, so the two people who will be incumbents.
Could Dave Norris get it again?
Any of them could.
Okay,
sure.
I tell you, he was going off; he wouldn't get it again.
You could also have a newcomer become mayor, and that's what happened with Dave Brown. The first day Dave Brown was in a city council meeting, he became mayor.
Yeah, that's right.
so that's also an option. But I think that's a fair guess to say that it would be Holly Edwards or Satyendra Hooja.
Okay, thank you.
Junior, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Brian Wheeler joins us every Tuesday afternoon to talk a little growth and development. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.